Hi, the name's Neubronner, Dion Neubronner. You're listening to my podcast, Life, Purpose, Leadership, where I chew the fat with people from many walks of life. Yep, I ponder the big questions and play around with some less significant ones too. I sometimes unpick the practice of leadership, delving into what it means to many. We laugh and explore what it is to live with purpose and meaning. I hope you find the chat as useful as I have having it. Life, purpose, leadership. My guest today is Michelle Sheen, who has a passion for stretching her mind and supporting others in creating and spreading their own brilliance. She loves talking about concepts relating to the human condition. She hopes to inspire and spread wonderfully off-center ideas through instinctive living and creating a community of inspired soulpreneurs through Content College. Well, Michelle Sheen, here we are again.
Hey? Here we are, Dion. Lots and lots happened since we chatted last time.
I know. So what are we talking about today?
Well, there's so many things going on.
I know.
Yeah. Our language shapes what we see. That's what you mean.
I wonder in what way do you agree with that, or
yes,
or what are your thoughts?
I do. Well, it's what we attach to the language, isn't it?
The meaning that we attach to the language.
Yes, and we all attach different meanings to the same language or the same words often. That's why Eckhart Tolle says, move away from the meaning, move away from the attachment of, yeah.
And he talks, he does, because actually in a podcast that I was listening to of his recently, he talks about his, and he wouldn't use this word frustration, but he talks about his frustration with trying to answer people's questions, because he has to put words together to form a sentence to answer people's questions. So for example, when he had his enlightenment, as people are calling it, he doesn't call it that. Mm-hmm. When he had his enlightenment, he puts a label on it and he called it peace. He found peace in that moment, a real inner peace. And the peace was a gateway to a deeper experience, a deeper understanding of who he was. And then he labeled that as presence, and he labeled it as space. He found a space within. And so when he answers the questions that people ask him, he says he gets frustrated or finds it tricky to be able to answer the questions, because he puts a certain meaning on the words that he chooses, and the people who are hearing his answers are going to put a particular meaning on the words he chooses.
Because it's all connected to emotion, isn't it? That's how we actually communicate, I think. But we use things like words and colors and sounds and whatever your medium is to create emotion in the other person, but they bring their history with and you don't know their history. Yeah, it's tricky because even Joe Dispenza talks about how we have our chakras, but he doesn't use the word chakra because he says it evokes a little bit of a hoo-hoo-ness.
I love that, a little bit of a hoo-hoo-ness.
Yeah, so he uses energy centers, which...
So he uses what, sorry?
Energy centers instead of chakras, which has this... It points to the same thing.
Okay.
It has a different emotion to it a little bit, because a chakra you kind of identify with, I don't know, a little bit out there, a little bit weird. But when we talk about energy centers, you can explain it from more of a scientific kind of perspective, almost.
In what way?
It's more grounded, I think. Chakra, what is a chakra?
What is that? Yeah.
Where an energy center is a there's a meaning to the word, something that everybody can attach something to.
So it sounds like there's a place. It's a place. it sounds like there's a geographical location.
That's it.
But again, so here we're talking here about meaning, isn't it? That we attach a meaning to that, or greater meaning to that than the phrase chakras, we are able to see.
Yes, because some people will be put off when they hear chakra, while other people might go like, oh yes, that's what my Reiki lady talks about, you know, but words are placeholders a bit, aren't they?
They are a little bit. And then you think about that in a number of different contexts, but in particular, it has huge implications then in terms of branding, if we look at it from a business perspective, isn't it?
Yes.
It has huge implications. And we know that it, on a basic level, it has huge implications for branding. And we always find trying to find the right words to sell the product or sell the service or to a particular
to connect.
Market.
It's about connecting to
connect. Essentially, when we're connecting, we're selling in a business context anyway. But for me, as a dad, I think about that. And that has huge implications for how, not least of all, how I communicate and connect with William. But also, I've seen it in evidence in terms of how he interprets words and their meaning and how I do. And I have my own interpretation of the very same thing. And I've even embarked on a certain course of action with him based on my own interpretation of the words. And it's been completely different from his perspective.
Yes, yes. Especially in our situation where we are growing, our children are growing up in a different culture than what we did.
Yeah.
So it's quite interesting to not carry over your meanings of words necessarily, because sometimes we bring a negative kind of connotation, which isn't necessarily there. I think religion is probably the best example of that, because that the words around that has been shaped around your perspective of it, not necessarily the meanings of it.
Eckhart Tolle uses scripture references
in his
conversations about the power of now. And I found that quite, I felt very content and at peace with that, because those references that he was making were not the references that I grew up with, not the interpretation that I grew up with. So I was more open to connecting not only with the words from in reference to the scriptures, but also in connecting to those words associated with what he was saying in terms of being embracing the power of now.
Yes, and that's exactly how he frames what he says. Don't attach yourself to the meaning of the word, because you might not see the full picture almost.
Which makes us come back to the other podcast that we were doing when I asked you, who is Michelle Sheen? And you said that the opposite. Well, who does Michelle want to be? If that is the case, if words are what we say they are, then we can influence who we want to be in this moment.
Which is connected to words, because that's what affirmations are, aren't they? It's I am. So therefore I move towards that possibility of what I want to be, because I am affirming that I'm already there using words. So it's our self-talk is where I think, or changing the language that we speak to ourselves, you know, I'm not good enough, you know.
I thought I would find this whole concept tricky, but actually, you know, breaking it down, it is the very thing that we tell ourselves daily. We need to be mindful of the words that we choose, because they are the very nets that we throw around ourselves. I'm just wondering if there is more to it than that, but in its simplest form, that is it, isn't it?
Yes, there's so much around it, though. I mean, for me, it's really based on emotion. There's been research around using certain words in a different language, but they still evoke the same emotion in people. So it's not necessarily always the meaning, but it's the perceived or the emotion that there is energy around kind of what we say and how we say it. I suppose it's a lot in the how we say it more than what we say.
where we place the energy, or the,
yeah,
which is essentially the emphasis or the intonation.
Yes. Mm. Yes. Yeah, we've heard quite, or maybe it's just my husband and I. It's not what you say, it's how you say it. I mean, you can say something really nice, but it's if you don't say it in a with a good intention, it comes across as not.
And that makes me think of the work Emma and I used to do a lot around public speaking. We used to work with people to help them get clear on how they come across. And a great deal of that we used to contextualize in the tone of voice that they use, the intonation that they use, the pausings that they use, the play on words that they use. And we never went into the energy side of things, but essentially that's what we were doing. We were exploring how you bring a certain energy to bear on a particular word or using on a particular sentence in a much larger talk for 10 minutes. I find it interesting that we are now exploring this in at that level, at that sort of that energy level, the a much deeper, more visceral kind of level. But it has very obvious implications on a more surface level, which is the choice, as we were saying, the tone of voice that we use, the how we say something rather than the what we say, right?
Yeah. It's a good example is talking to your children, you know?
Yes.
Sometimes if you shout at them, they just doesn't go in. But if you can say the same thing in a kind of eye contact, softer tone, connecting, same thing, but different outcome. So,
Yeah, I think of an example of me on the tennis court with William on the tennis court. I think that results in a lot of non-soft communication.
Can you imagine?
And as a result, William's response is the shoulders drop down and he gets annoyed with me. And there is this reciprocal kind of communication going on between the two of us, or lack of communication going on between the two of us.
Yeah.
That's the reality of the words help us see or not see. They get in the way, don't they? Mm.
They do, yeah, quite a lot. It's interesting on this, what the bleep do we know, they talk about the possibility that we might not even see things that we do not know. So they're saying that people, when Columbus came to the Americas, because people had never seen boats or you know, big ships or something, did they really notice it? Do we see things? Could there be things around us just because we don't understand them, we don't see them? But that's a bit out there, I think.
Well, yes, it is a little bit. But if we take this concept, in fact, I think it's more than a concept, it is what it is. Language shapes what we see. If we take that to another level, then are we actually seeing, for example, I have two candelabra here on my table. Am I actually seeing two candelabra? I'm only seeing what I've been told is a candelabra.
Yeah.
And if I were told that which is on my table was Y, and over the years had been conditioned to believe so, then I would believe it. Then I would see that shapes what I see.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting, and now I can't remember what it is, but there is a situation. Some people see certain things in color. So Friday will be yellow. So now words evoke emotion, right? But it also evoke different senses in some people. Like some people will see color around certain words.
And some people might see that around, see color or different things around people. They might see
or
situations
or things. We have this theory that it's a name for an animal, for example, has an impact on the animal's behavior. Well, same with a child or a person. You know, it's quite important what you call someone, and there is a meanings around those things. But like we have this black cat, and we called our black cat Shadow, and she's a shadow. She just, you know, she skulks around the house. Now, is she like that because, you know, the name evokes that kind of response, or was she, if we called a ninja, would she be more confident? If, you know, and I think there is some truth in the fact that if you call someone a, if you put negative energy into what you'd call someone constantly, it creates a negative perception and it becomes a negative thing.
And that thing becomes that.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, if the teacher keeps telling you you're bad at maths,
you're going to believe you're bad at maths.
Maybe you're not bad at maths, but you're now believing that you're bad at maths, and therefore you won't develop your math skills and you become bad at maths. Not because you were bad at maths in the first place, but, you know, we put meaning in situations where maybe they're not the right ones.
And that's why I come back to my tennis point with me and William. I'm so mindful of ensuring that he still enjoys playing, because I don't want to put a barrier there by providing the constant instruction. And yet I find myself in those situations doing the opposite.
because you want a certain outcome. You want him to be able to hit the ball in a certain way. So at some point, maybe it comes back to we need to let go of the outcome and enjoy the process instead of focusing on that future, because it comes back to the now again, doesn't it? If you weren't worried about how he was going to develop his serve or his, you know, backhand or whatever it is, you wouldn't worry about how he does it now, because you'll just be enjoying it.
Which is very true. I don't know about anybody else listening, but again, this is a head fuck for me. Really, it always is talking to you.
Oh, thanks, dear.
And then I think to myself, gosh, just ignore it all. It's just too much. Ignore it all.
But then what?
But then the head gets in the way. That's the ego, right? That's the ego complex. That's the ego saying ignore it all. Because it's actually not tricky. It's actually not too difficult. It is made difficult by the ego.
Attention, yes, because it takes attention and it's uncomfortable. And we always move away from these uncomfortable things. Well, some of us. I tend to get myself into them quite often. Well, that's part of growth, though. I think that's maybe why we're here, isn't it? We need to.
And I think it's part of the human condition to want to step into things like that, into tricky or challenging situations. I think from an ego perspective, simply we step into challenging situations because we feel the need to grow. We feel the desire to grow. We express a desire to grow because we associate stepping into challenging situations, which lead to growth. We believe that that is the way through growth. That is the way to grow.
But we can only grow if we leave the ego behind. So maybe
ego is the one who's telling us that this is challenging.
Yes. So if we can quiet that bloody ego, we can actually focus on the magic of being in a situation where you maybe thought that you weren't going to make it. But that's not easy, because the ego is quite loud. It's like a persistent, loud voice, isn't it?
It is. But there is an example of how you chose carefully the words you use to deliver that. So, well, we've solved the problem or the conundrum that our language does shape us.
Yes.
Or shape what we see.
Yes, but now how do we move away from that? Because if I want to communicate with you around a subject that you have certain understanding, you've attached certain meanings to things around it, but I have different meanings. How do I communicate with you in a way that we can leave that? Because it's past, isn't it? It's all based in the past, your meanings that you attach to words. We can go as far as to say, what the children always say, who said this is red? Is it really red? You know, just because we decided that this color is called red, it is now red. But now a colorblind person doesn't see that as red, do they? So it's
the question is, how do we let go of the fact that words shape us, or words or language helps us see? Because if we see a particular person in a particular way, we are going to communicate with them or connect with them in that particular way, or in a particular way connected to that. So how do we let go of that and connect? My initial thought when asking that is, by virtue of acknowledging that, of acknowledging the fact that I need to let this go in order to connect, on one level, I'm connecting then.
Yeah. I think it starts with that creating awareness between the people in a conversation. So between the two of us, we need to acknowledge that we might see things differently, and that, you know, it's a tricky time also to kind of have this, because if we're sitting across the table from each other, we communicate differently, we can use less words, or they will not have as big of an impact, because there's also an energy exchange. Where now we're in a world where we talk over Zoom calls and telephones and, you know, things like that. So our communication has surely changed a bit as well. And sadly, I mean, I've been watching a little bit of this, what's it called, The Social Dilemma. So we're being controlled as well, in a way, through words and through what we are being fed through whatever media or social media or radio or TV or movies. You can see all the movies that are coming out has got some kind of connection to either a virus or a situation where we have to move away from fear, because there's a lot of fear around us. There's a lot of fear-induced or inducing messaging around us. So it's coming back again to emotion. How do we control our own emotions when we're being bombarded with messaging, words, and meanings to words that are meant to induce fear in us?
The only way I've been able to control my emotions of late is take drugs. Well, by the way, people, it's prescription drugs.
Well, this is a way of communicating. Altered states has been found in many tribal, whether they're prescription or not. So, by the way,
yeah, I mean, but that's even though we're laughing at it, there is something about that, because
a lot.
I've gone through some shitty times, and I'm on antidepressants. Really, it's a small dose of antidepressants, but it has allowed me to do what we were just saying: control my emotions. Of course, I do other things, like I meditate and I pause and I breathe and I'm exploring all this stuff that we're talking about. But at the same time, there is another level of support. But my simple point is, the controlling of emotions, to echo what you're saying, I guess, is a tricky thing to do.
Yeah, especially in our situation.
You know, the wider situation, the pandemic that we find ourselves in, yeah.
Which is also words, isn't it? So it is words, pandemic, yeah. I mean, that's like a crazy word. What does it mean? It means fear and chaos and stuff. So we're bombarded with these things every day. I mean, I don't listen to the radio at all anymore. Don't watch TV. Unfortunately, I'm on social media, so there's a lot of that still comes through. But there's fear in words, and there can also be love in words, and there can also be peace in words. So we need to be careful of the words that we allow in and out, in a way. And I think there should be a mutual understanding that sometimes I might say the wrong thing because your connection to the meaning of a word is different than mine.
I think that's beautiful when you think about it. Let's pause on that one. So what we're saying is that there could be a misunderstanding because I interpret certain words in a certain way. And that really is the nub of all fear and conflict, really, isn't it?
Exactly. And coming back again to, I think religion is such a big part of that. It's like, if you say God, for me, God isn't that angry guy in the sky with a big white beard. He's not even, it's not a he, and he's not non-binary. There is just no, it's not a concept. And I think we've been conditioned to think in certain ways of certain things, whether it's religion or politics or money as a value system or whatever it is, time, do we really have to understand the same thing when we mention those words? Everything in the world will be solved if everybody just realizes that we all have different perspectives, and maybe there shouldn't be any separation. I feel that this is a very big drive these days to find different ways to separate people, whether you are using gender. I mean, we have all these
race.
Gender, race, everything. Yeah.
People go on about this thing that truth.
Whose truth?
Whose?
Yeah, my truth is different than your truth, because I experience life differently. I do it through my eyes, but I'd like to learn about yours, but I'm never really going to understand it through your eyes unless you find the words that make sense to me. But if I take the time to try and understand without my understanding of words as I get it, if I leave that behind, then maybe I stand a chance of understanding your version of it.
Which for me is real empathy. That is...
yeah.
Empathy personified.
And isn't that what it all boils down to? If we can't practice empathy, then there is no hope, really, because we are connected. And to each other, we need that connection. We are part of a system. We're not curious about what the words mean to everybody around us, then we're never going to learn. We're never going to understand what it is without becoming oversensitive either. I mean, this hypersensitivity is a bit of an issue as well, because if I say something that's wrong, then you're going to stone me or something. And it's,
well, yeah, absolutely. And me being a drama queen, I'm very hypersensitive. It's true, but you hit the nail on the head with that. I think that, and for me, that's back to our conditioning, back to the pain body elements of the power of now.
Yeah.
And in a conscious way, opening the door to the pain body, opening the door through my ego to the pain body in a particular conversation where I've become hypersensitive.
Yeah, but noticing why, you know.
I notice why retrospectively, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not at the time so much.
Sometime at the time, but not always at the time, yeah. So, really, what have we said? Language, so we agree, do we then? That language shapes us? Language shapes what we see?
It does, but it would be nice for us to move away from that a bit, because I think it's also a way that we can be manipulated and we... you know, not all things in our environment has our best interest at heart.
I love that, moving away from the potential manipulation that language shapes what we see. Because when we do, then we truly see.
Exactly, exactly.
Smashed it. Now go forth and implement that.
Yeah.
The practical application. So that's actually quite a liberating, I feel quite liberated by that. I feel quite energized by that, to move away from the practice or the concept that language shapes what we see. And when we move away from that, we step into pure potentiality. We step into our real presence. We step away from that and we really truly connect with people. I love that. I feel very energized by it.
Good, good. It is, because we're connected through more than just work. And we don't use that enough because we've been stupefied.
We have. We've been stupefied and conditioned to find words that that provide meaning to what I'm experiencing or what I'm trying to say to you. But what we're not saying is words are unnecessary.
No, because
we're not saying that.
Yeah, but it's only a tool, and we need to understand the tool sometimes, because it can inhibit communication in a way if we if I use the wrong word, am I now offending you? I didn't mean to offend you, just because you know what I mean?
Well, that's been a brilliant discussion, Michelle. I love that. Absolutely love that. Thank you very much.
I did too, Dion. It is very freeing to think about and to talk about the fact that maybe we connect deeper than just through words.
So that's it. The name's Neubronner, Dion Neubronner. You're listening to my podcast, Life, Purpose, Leadership. If you liked what you heard and want to share it, please feel free. If you like the show a lot, please let me know by writing a comment on the platform you use to find the show. Thanks. You're listening to my podcast, Life, Purpose, Leadership.